So tomorrow, 4 days after Ekadasi, makes Chaturdasi. Right? Wednesday, Thursday, Ekadasi, Dwadasi, Triodasi, Chaturdasi. Nishringa Chaturdasi. Nishringadev's appearance day. So, what prompted Lord Nrisimhadev to appear? You always have your hand up. Go ahead. What prompted him to appear?
Because that Hiranyakashipu was not respecting one of his devotees.
Okay. And why did Hiranyakashipu react negatively to such a darling, gentle, loving, non-violent Prahlad Maharaj?
Because he said Lord Vishnu was the enemy.
Because Prahlad just wanted to talk about the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So yesterday evening, we covered a little section before what we're going to cover this evening. This evening is what really set Hiranyakashipu off. The other two were times he just hit the ceiling. And that was when, on two occasions, it's described in the seventh canto of Bhagavatam that Hiranyakashipu entrusted his son and his other sons, because he had other sons beside Prahlad, and the other sons of the Daityas were entrusted to the school of, they call it the Asurakula, the school of Sanda and Amarka, the sons of Shukracharya. And after some time, he was busy conquering the universe, and he took a little time out and asked his son what's the best thing that he's learned. He didn't ask him the best thing you learned from Sanda and Amarka. He said the best thing that you've learned. So he told him the best thing that he learned was devotional service to Lord Vishnu. That's the best thing that he's learned. And Hiranyakashipu didn't like to hear that. So he ordered Sanda and Amarka two things. Make sure no enemies come sneaking in the disguise of one of us and poisons the intelligence of this boy any further so that he takes shelter of the enemy, Lord Vishnu. And make sure the other one was train him up in all the Asura skills. And they tried. But their skills were friends and enemies. So Prahlad said to them, Sanda and Amarka asked, "Dear Prahlad, you're such a nice boy. You always speak the truth. Oh, kindly speak the truth, and where did you hear this?" "You're speaking nicely about the enemy, and that's not how you're supposed to speak." And Prahlad's reply was, "I've heard this before, friends and enemies, but now I'm seeing it. So it's your acharyas for friends and enemies, sending the nice example. How I shouldn't be. I don't want to be like that." He didn't speak that way exactly, but they were very frustrated. They tried, but Prahlad had already been fixed in consciousness from just that time when he was just in the womb of his mother, hearing from Narada Muni in Narada Muni's ashram. But as we discussed yesterday, it was a long time. Rani Kashyapu's austerities, raising his arms in the air, standing on the tips of his toes, motionless as the ants were eating away his body over the years. He was an austere personality. But he had a goal. He was already the emperor of the universe, and he put two and two together. If I can live forever, I'll be God, emperor of the universe forever. So while he was, for all that period of time, engaging in his austerities, Kayadu was hearing Srimad Bhagavatam and the topics of Krishna from Narada Muni, and so was another spirit soul, Prahlad. Prahlad later describes to his friends, because my mother's, she's very nice, but she's also attached to Hiranyakashipu on the platform of the body, and so when she was again with her husband, my father, she forgot everything. But I don't have that same identification with the body, and therefore I've been able to remember everything that I heard. So Sandanamarka gave him a last chance. You behave well and learn your lessons well, otherwise you're going to have a big problem. Three strikes and you're out. I don't think they played baseball at that time. So, speaking about the glories of Lord Nrisimhadev and his dear devotee Prahlad Maharaj would be incomplete without this one verse that, if you've heard Srila Prabhupada's recorded lectures, you've heard this verse many, many, many times. So I'll recite the verse and you can say along with me if you know. Kumara acharet pragyo dharman bhagavatani ha durlabam manasam janma tad api adravam artadham. Kumara acharet pragyo. When Prahlad is speaking to his classmates, one should learn about Krishna from the Kumara age. What's the Kumara age? Begins with five, like when kids go to school. From one to five is Bala. And then Kumara, then Poganda, then Kaishor. So, during childhood, Prabhupada spoke like this, that when a child is very small, up to 5 years old, they can do whatever they like, and they do whatever they like. Except if there's something that's going to harm them, then you check them. But otherwise, they do what they like. And then starting at five, the education begins. So, Kumara, acharat pragyo dharmam bhagavatan iha. Bhagavad dharma is something that should be taught, Prabhupada has translated this, at the tender age of childhood. And again he would speak about this in terms of education. Because there's sometimes a different idea that spiritual education, you should get serious about spiritual life when you're old. You've heard that one, right? I didn't hear that until I met people born in India. I never heard that in America before, but it's one of those things. When you're old and when you're young, and childhood you play, and then you learn your studies, and you go through life, and then you get serious about spiritual life. But Prahlad Maharaj is teaching that it should begin right away kumara acharet pragyo dharman bhagavataniha. And why is that? Durlabham manusham janma. This human form of life is rarely achieved. Out of the various species of life, there are so many other options besides the human form of life. Out of whatever the percentage is, 8,400,000, the percentage of 4,000 is not so big. We have a nice rasa. He just likes to see what he can do to keep my attention. Thank Krishna. So, Prabhupada once said that we should assume that before reaching this human form of life, we've already experienced, practically speaking, all the other forms of life. That's a lot of other forms. And those other forms of life are achieved due to guna and karma. In fact, the present form of life is guna and karma. But it's the gradual evolution of consciousness. Commonly, when speaking about this verse, Prabhupada would speak about evolution. There is a Vedic conception of evolution, but it's evolution of consciousness. And as consciousness evolves, then the forms of life evolve correspondingly. That is to say, the lower forms of life have very covered consciousness, and that covering is due to their past karma and association with the modes of nature. So by being captured in, let's say, a tree body, a spirit soul in a tree body, how long may they live? Long time. To receive that, it's a form of karmic bondage. They can't move. It's the cold, pinching cold of winter and scorching heat of the summer, torrents of rain, blasting of wind. And they just have to stand there. They can't, nothing, just endure. Prabhupada explained that if our present consciousness, we were in that condition, we would faint. We couldn't endure that in human standard of consciousness. Therefore, consciousness has to be covered, and it is. And when that form of life has expired, then that much karma is burned or relieved, and that much covering of consciousness is diminished, so consciousness comes up a slight notch, and correspondingly then another form of life, and so on and so on, up to the position where one comes to the human form of life. In the lower forms of life, there's no question of being able to exercise the kind of consciousness that can free the soul. And so there's no accruing of additional karma. There's relieving of those stages of karma or bondage. There's no good bad karma for an animal or an insect. They're just moved by the modes of nature, and they move according to the impulses born of the modes of nature. Karanam guna sangosya, the modes of nature move them. But when one comes to the human form of life and there's advanced consciousness, in that condition where there's advanced consciousness, then we can make choices. Prabhupada gives the example of a hog. He liked to speak about hogs like to live in filthy places, and they like to eat abominable things. And you invite a hog, here's a nice plate of halva. Come take a bath 3 times a day and live in our ashram. No. A mud puddle, please. And stool. Because of the body. Give to offer a tiger. Here's a nice plate of rice and some sabji and some puri. No. They'll starve before they'll eat those things. It's that their embodiment doesn't facilitate that. It's not food for them. But in the human form of life, we have options because of consciousness that's more advanced or evolved or less covered by the lower modes of nature. Then there's the facility awarded by human nature to decide. In fact, according to the Vedic teaching, the human form of life has a specific purpose. The specific purpose is self-realization, God-realization. That when you get a human form, that's in the packaging. There's an operator's manual. It's called Bhagavad Gita. And it's how you're supposed to use this human form of life. And it's to be used for self-realization and God-realization. But there's also an option to do something else. And if one does something else, then adho gacchanti tamasa, one can go down from the human form of life. Or madhye tishtanti rajasa, stay in this human form of life. Or urvam gacchanti sattvasta, go upwards to a heavenly destination. Or ultimately, back home, back to Godhead. Purnar janma navidyate. Those are facilities that's for the human form of life. So, durlabham manusham janma. Tad api adravam artadam. That if one uses the human form of life in the proper way, it's even a small amount of devotional service, it's so beneficial. On that basis, great saintly persons are very keen, enthusiastic to go out of their way with great difficulty and inconvenience and hardship and risk to create situations where persons can be engaged in devotional service. I'll read the translation, very nice. Prahlad Maharaj said, "One who is sufficiently intelligent should use the human form of body from the very beginning of life, in other words, from the tender age of childhood, to practice the activities of devotional service, giving up all other engagements. The human body is most rarely achieved, and although temporary, like other bodies, it is meaningful because in human life one can perform devotional service. Even a slight amount of sincere devotional service can give one complete perfection." Artadam. Arta is commonly translated as wealth. Dharma, arta, kama, moksha. From engaging in pious activities or prescribed duties, dharma, there's a fruit of that. And the fruit is prosperity. And prosperity is commonly thought of to assist in sense gratification. And then at the end of life, the good stuff, moksha. So, the actual meaning of artha, the literal meaning of artha, is that which is desired, or goal. Gati is another word, artha. Most people, they want material happiness, material prosperity, and so artha means wealth. Dharma, to get wealth. Dharma, to get piety, and piety comes one of the fruits of piety is wealth. And the purpose of that is to enjoy nicely. But that's how most people think. In fact, Krishna declares that in Bhagavad Gita. Most people think, second chapter, that's the purpose of the Vedas and there's nothing more. So just to amplify that idea, that's not the proper use of the human form of life, according to what Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita. Little anecdotal story. Years ago, when Bhurijan Prabhu started the Vrindavan Institute for Higher Education, around that same time I was thinking, I really want to spend Kartik month in Vrindavan. It's so auspicious. But being service-minded, I don't want to just go and be in Vrindavan. I want to do some service in Vrindavan. So Bhurijan had started the VIHE, so I would teach and attend some of the classes of the other teachers and be in Vrindavan during Kartik doing some service. So yeah, I forgot what was the purpose of saying that. Yeah. When I was there one year, Kadamba Kanana Swami was the temple president because he had just completed... Please don't do that. He had just completed... He was working for years helping to build Prabhupada's Pushpa Samadhi in Mayapur. And finally the project was completed. So he was invited to come to Vrindavan and become the temple president in Vrindavan. So he was the temple president. I was teaching at the VIHE. And he asked me, there's a nice devotee who's gone to Jaipur to start a temple. He was helping me with the Prabhupada's samadhi, his Pushpa Samadhi in Mayapur. And so I take some interest in Jaipur, and he's gone to Jaipur. What, can you go and spend some days and assist him and just do, you know, whatever he wants as a visiting sannyasi to do in Jaipur? So I said, sure. Jaipur is a wonderful place. And this nice devotee, sure, I'd like to support. So I went. And he arranged a program at University of Jaipur. I guess that's the name of it. And he apparently had done a very active job of advertising because it was a very large hall, big rectangular hall, and it was packed with people. I mean, packed. And so, not knowing what to expect from the audience, I decided to begin by asking them a question. And the question went like this. How many of you would agree? Let me finish the whole thing and then raise your hand at the end if you agree. This is a true statement. The purpose of religion is to live your life in such a way that you're following the codes of Dharma, theistic conduct. And by following the codes of theistic conduct, you'll live piously. And by living piously, in this life, you will prosper, having the fruits of piety. And after this life, you continue living your life in that way. Enjoy nicely, live piously, don't hurt anyone. Don't do a dharma, just do dharma. And at the end of your life, you'll attain the heavenly destination. And in that heavenly destination, the happiness and prosperity will be hundreds and thousands of times more. How many would agree that's the purpose of religion? Everyone raised their hand. Except for one person. I said, okay, it was a pretty overwhelming response. Is there anybody else that has a different idea? And one girl sitting way in the back, because girls had to sit in the back, back of the bus program, she raised her hand. And I thought, wow, she's bold. You know, one against 1,000, or however many people were there. So I asked, you know, do you have a different idea? She said, yes. She said, and so I asked her, what's that other idea? She said, the purpose of religion is to know Krishna, because by knowing Krishna, it's only through devotional service you can know Krishna, and by knowing Krishna, then you'll not have to take birth again in this material world, but you can live eternally in devotion to the personality of Godhead, Krishna, in the spiritual world. I said, wow, you must be reading Srila Prabhupada's books. And she said, yes, Maharaj, I'm reading Prabhupada's books. And the others, the generic version, is exactly what Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita. And it's not just this part of the world or that part of the world or some other part of the world. It's without Bhagavad Dharma, because that's what Prahlad is saying to his classmates, Bhagavad Dharma should be learned from the very beginning. Bhagavad Dharma is not what I just described. What I just described is the path of Karmakanda, where there are rituals and duties and prayers and performances that one should observe for enhancing one's piety and neutralizing any mistakes that one may have made, any sinful activity or reaction to those, and gradually become well situated in the quality of goodness. But the quality of goodness is also mixed with passion and ignorance. And Trigunya Vishaya Veda Nishtrigunya Bhavarjana. Krishna's advice is the Vedas deal mainly with not just the three modes of nature, but trying to be an enjoyer within the three modes of nature. Vishaya means enjoyment. It's specific, sense enjoyment. Trigunya Vishaya Veda Nishtrigunya Bhavarjana. If you go Nishtrigunya, what's left? The upper, middle, and lower planetary systems are not your target. Not prosperity in this middle planetary region with an upgrade to the heavenly. So what's the goal? Bhagavad Dharma, the goal is to please the personality of Godhead. If that principle of life is demonstrated by the teachers and the parents and the community and the children growing up amongst the teachers and the parents and the community, that's what they learn, Bhagavad Dharma. And that becomes their life, devotional service to the personality of Godhead. Because that's the purpose of the human form of life. And that, so to obtain the human form, Prahlada's teaching, it's very rare. Just going to read a couple more verses. The human form of life affords one a chance to return home back to Godhead. This is Prahlada speaking. Therefore, every living entity, especially in the human form of life, must engage in devotional service to the lotus feet of Lord Vishnu. This devotional service is natural because Lord Vishnu, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, is the most beloved, the master of the soul, and the well-wisher of all living beings, which is almost a paraphrase of the peace formula verse of Bhagavad Gita 5:29. Bhoktaram jagatapasam sarvaloka maheshwaram suhridam sarvabhutanam gyatvamam shantim richati. So Prahlad is using different language than Krishna speaking to Arjuna, but he's saying the same thing. If one has an understanding of Bhagavan, this is a core part of Bhagavad Dharma. He's whatever austerities and sacrifices we perform, he's the beneficiary, bhokta. He's the one, bhokta, it means he's the one to enjoy. When I was a new devotee, we used to have this language. We had a Prasadam refrigerator and a Boga refrigerator. Because if there was leftover prasadam, you didn't put it in the Boga refrigerator. You put it in the prasadam refrigerator, because Boga meant that which is not offered yet. So we didn't eat Boga, we ate prasadam. So Bhokta has a similar root. He's the enjoyer. He's meant to be the enjoyer of whatever you do. Even if it's the formulas of Scripture, the rituals and practices of Scripture, he is the enjoyer. Bhoktaram yagitapasam. And he is the proprietor of everything. Sarvaloka maheshwaram. It all belongs to him, and there's implications. If it belongs to him, then he's the enjoyer of it. We enter this world owning nothing. And we leave this world owning nothing. And in between, we're very busy trying to make something ours. And the one with more toys wins. Prosperity is you have more things. But those more things that don't belong to you, what's that? Supposing, you know, I come to visit the house here and I really like this nice book stand. So when I leave, I take it with me because I like it. I mean, if I asked it, just like your television or like, you know, the loudspeaker system or I like whatever something. I like your car, just go home with it. Because I like it. That wouldn't be very nice. In fact, there's laws against it. We're doing like that, not recognizing Sarvaloka Maheshwaram. Krishna is the proprietor. When you do your Bhakti Shastri study and you study Sri Isha Upanishad, that's one of the things that you learn, is the whole treatise of Isha Upanishad it's the principal Upanishad, or one of the principal Upanishads, and the whole message is about proprietorship. In fact, Prabhupada discusses in Isha Upanishad purport so many different ideologies, isms, political and spiritual, or political and religious, especially political, have to do with who owns things. Based upon the concept of who owns things, you have ideology. It belongs to the worker. Because I made it, it belongs to me. Or belongs to the capitalist because I provide the capital for it. Or belongs to the state because everything belongs to the state. It belongs to the king because he's the landlord. Or belongs to nobody because you're a thief. Lawless. Communism. So different isms are there from a sense of proprietorship, but spiritual conception is everything belongs to God. And if everything belongs to God, what do? In the first of the Chaturshloki verses of Bhagavad Gita, what's that one? Do you know? Any of our children know? Aham Sarvasya Prabhavo. You know that one? Go ahead, from the top.
Aham Sarvasya Prabhavo Mata Sarvam Pravartate Iti Mat Bhavajante Mam Buddha Bhava Samanvita.
You know that one too, don't you? Know this one? No?
I think so.
So start from the top. Aham Sarvasya Prabhavo.
Aham Sarvasya Prabhavo.
Mata.
Mata.
Sarvam.
Sarvam Pravartate.
Yeah. Iti Mat Ma.
Iti Mat Ma.
Iti madva bhajante mam buddha bhava samanvita. Krishna is saying to Arjuna, first of the Chaturshloki verses, Bhagavad Gita. Please don't pick at that. Thanks. I am the source of everything, Krishna says. Then he says in reverse, everything comes from me. I am the source of everything. Everything comes from me. You know, in case you didn't get it the first time. I am the source of everything. Everything comes from me. Iti matva, thus knowing, bhajante mam. One engages in my devotional service. Buddha bhava samandita. And Krishna gives them intelligence and enlivens them spiritually, happy, joyful in that, in living in that consciousness, in Krishna consciousness, recognizing Krishna as the source of everything. So Prahlad Maharaj is advising the same, and Krishna is advising the same. Sarvaloka Maheshwaram Suhridam. Suhrid, he's the dearmost friend, affectionate friend to all living beings. Doesn't matter they're rebellious. Doesn't matter whatever their position is. He's affectionate. That's his nature. Thus knowing, one is very happy. So Prahlad is indicating the human form of life is meant to provide that opportunity. And if one doesn't receive that opportunity because they're too busy doing other things, then it's most unfortunate. So the middle part of the chapter, this is taking much longer than I had intended, but the middle part of the chapter, Prahlad gives a very detailed, 40 verses worth of detail describing how the material energy keeps one very, very, very busy throughout the whole of your life. And at the tail end of your life, at the end of the conveyor belt of life, you missed it. The whole life has passed you by and material tendencies are very strong. Not good. Material tendencies are very strong, and it's like Prabhupada's example of old bamboo. It can't bend. It'll break as the wind blows, and the old bamboo is it'll break. Not flexible. So therefore, childhood, this message should be learned. So I want to read a little section towards the end that's he's in ecstasy. Prahlad Maharaj is in ecstasy describing the personality of Godhead and the relationship with him. So I'm just going to read verses. Oh my friends, sons of the Asuras, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, in his supersoul feature, always exists within the core of the hearts of all living entities. Indeed, he is a well-wisher and friend of all living entities, and there is no difficulty in worshipping the Lord. Why then should people not engage in his devotional service? Why are they addicted to unnecessarily producing artificial paraphernalia for sense gratification? One's riches, beautiful wife and female friends, one's sons and daughters, one's residence, one's domestic animals, like cows, not here in Detroit, elephants, not here in Detroit, and horses, maybe a few horses. One's treasury, economic development, and sense gratification, indeed, even the lifetime itself in which one can enjoy all these material opulences are certainly temporary and flickering. Since the opportunity of human life is temporary, what benefit can these material opulences give to a sensible man who has understood himself to be eternal? It is learned from Vedic literature that by performing great sacrifices, one may elevate himself to the heavenly planets. However, although life on the heavenly planets is hundreds and thousands of times more comfortable than on earth, the heavenly planets are not pure. or free from the taint of material existence. The heavenly planets are also temporary, and therefore they are not the goal of life. The Supreme Personality of Godhead, however, has never been seen or heard to possess inebriety. Consequently, for your own benefit and self-realization, you must worship the Lord with great devotion, as described in the revealed scripture. Remember who he's speaking to. This is the classroom of Sandandamarka, Sukracharya's Asurakula. A materialistic person, thinking himself very advanced in intelligence, continually acts for economic development, but again and again, as enunciated in the Vedas, he is frustrated by material activities, either in this life or the next. Indeed, the results one obtains are inevitably the opposite of those one desires, again and again. In this material world, every materialistic desire to achieve happiness and diminish his distress, and therefore he acts accordingly. Actually, however, one is happy as long as one does not endeavor for happiness. As soon as one begins his activity for happiness, his conditions of distress begin. And Krishna says the same thing in Bhagavad Gita. Yehi sam sparshaja bhoga dukha yonaya evate. Bring the senses in contact with sense objects, thinking, I want to enjoy. You get smacked. Dukkha. It's the very yoni, it's the place of birth of dukkha. Namely, expecting happiness by bringing the senses in contact with sense objects. And as he's saying again and again, when I was these boys' age, they had a common toy, like one of the. There's fashions and fads that happen regularly. Kids getting scooters again became a fad. I mean, it was a long time. There weren't scooters, and scooters were in. So when I was little, one of the toys that kids got, everybody got one, because you had to get one because everyone had one. It was a Jack in the Box. Now it's the name of an eating place where they sell all kinds of unmentionable things. But the Jack in the Box had a little winding up kind of a device in the back, a spring. You make spring tight, and then you press the top. And then when you press the top little button, the top would flap open, and a clown-looking personality with arms, and it would make a little sound, and go, woo-woo-woo-woo. And just like that, we would all laugh, and then push the clown back into the box, put the latch back on the box, and wind the thing back up again, and then press the thing, and you can do it for a long time because we're just kids. And I remember thinking, this is material life. And as a devotee, I certainly remember that little program, material life. We are expecting happiness, and you get and just do it again and do it again and do it again. I was speaking last night about Jarasandha and how determined he was to defeat Krishna, and every time he got defeated by Krishna. But he didn't give up. He just kept getting another army and going back again and getting totally humiliated and annihilated. Krishna alone defeated his entire army except for one person. Jarasandha said, go back home now. And for a king, that's great dishonor. It's a great disgrace. But Krishna didn't even give the honor of killing him. So, as Prahlad is saying here, that the determination for material happiness, it doesn't end. It's incessant. And it's the same result. You try for happiness and you get distress. Dukkhaliyam ashashvatam. A living entity desires comfort for his body and makes many plans for this purpose. But actually, the body is the property of others. Indeed, the perishable body embraces the living entity and then leaves him aside. Anyway, he goes on about the futility of material life. And then he starts speaking about devotional service again. Oh, my dear friends, oh, sons of the demons, you cannot please the personality of Godhead by becoming perfect brahmanas, demigods, or great saints, or becoming perfectly good and etiquette, or vast learning. None of these qualifications can awaken the pleasure of the Lord. It gives another long list. The Lord is pleased only if one has unflinching, unalloyed devotion to Him. Without sincere devotional service, everything is simply a show. My dear friends, O sons of the demons, in the same favorable way that one sees himself and takes care of himself, take to devotional service to satisfy the Supreme Personality of Godhead, who is present everywhere as the Supersoul in all living entities. O my friends, O sons of the demons, everyone, including you, the yakshas and rakshasas, the unintelligent women, shudras, cowherd men, birds, lower animals, sinful living entities, can revive his original, eternal spiritual life and exist forever simply by accepting the principles of bhakti yoga. In this material world, to render service to the lotus feet of Govinda, the cause of all causes, to see him everywhere, is the only goal of life. This much alone is the ultimate goal of human life, as explained in all the revealed scriptures. Just at that time, Sundarnamarka came in the room again. What? We're going to tell Hiranyakashipu, you're in big trouble now. Three strikes and you're out. So that's what provoked Hiranyakashipu to decide that he wanted to kill his own son, because he saw Vishnu as God instead of him. Because he had that idea. He was now not only the king of the universe, but he was immortal. At least he thought he was immortal. So I'm God. I'm the controller of everything, and I'm in this position forever. And you're saying Vishnu is God? So he decided he wanted to kill him. And I'm going to tell a little story at the end here. Not so long ago, in our Vaishnav calendar, we observed Akshaya Tritiya. Yes? And that has a connection with Prahlad Maharaj. At least one part of, besides the auspicious day that it is, it's on that auspicious day that the deity in Simhachalam is shown to the public, because the other days of the year there's so many kilograms of chandan coating the deity. So I want to describe a little bit the history of that deity. One of the ways in which Prahlad Maharaj was to be killed, at least Hiranyakashipu's plan was to kill him, was to have some of his assistants throw him off a cliff. And those of you that know where Simhachalam is, or Vishakhapatnam is, it's by the ocean. And Simhachalam is now on top of a mountain, but at least the story goes, those that reside there say the ocean was right proximate to the ocean, to the mountain at that time. So when the assistants of Hiranyakashipu pushed Prahlad off the mountain, he was caught by a form of Lord Vishnu who was in the ocean or residing in the ocean and caught Prahlad. So that form of the Lord who rescues the earth from the Garbhadak ocean is Varaha. So a form of Varaha Nrisimha, of form of Lord Vishnu caught Prahlad, and in a very protective mood placed Prahlad up on top of the mountain. So that was one of the failures of Hiranyakashipu to kill Prahlad. After some time, the personality of Godhead assumed a form of a deity in the mood of rescuing Prahlad in that particular episode of Hiranyakashipu was trying to kill him. And long time passed, and one king, still in Satya Yuga, my memory serves me right, it's Parurava, and a heavenly damsel, or Vashi, they happened to be passing by. And the Lord appeared to him in a dream, Parurava, and said, I've been waiting here for some time, I'd like you to engage in my worship. Well, Parura was very happy to have such a dream, the Supreme Lord. It kind of interrupted his other program, but he found the deity and made a very nice temple for the deity. And according to how the Lord had instructed him, he engaged in worship of the deity. And to this day, the worship of the deity is done in that fashion. But then the Lord appeared again in a dream and said, I'm still very angry at how Prahlad was treated by Hiranyakashipu, and this anger is making my body very hot. So I want you to cover my body in large quantity of chandan. And so the way that the worship is to this day being conducted is, I can't remember exactly the number of kgs, something like 12 kgs of chandan four times. So it becomes 48 kgs, but somehow I remember 64 kgs, whatever. However it's done, at a certain day, at a certain time, in a certain way, the priests cover the deity in chandan. And then again, more chandan and more chandan. So when you go, commonly when you go to see the deity, it's just, looks like a huge chunk of chandan. But on the evening before Akshaya Tritiya, the darshan ends at 6 o'clock. I know this because some devotees, it's described in literatures, but some devotees were invited to participate in that. So they clear out, everybody, darshan's over. And then they have a ceremony from 6 o'clock until 11 o'clock at night. And something like what we do, where we like having extended kirtan, this kirtan singer, and then that kirtan singer, and then that kirtan singer. They have their whole group of people that do the musical accompaniment. So they do it in the form of stotras, or prayers. And so there's a group of Brahmins, they sit over here, and they sing and chant these prayers. That's their transcendental topmost happiness, is chanting sets of prayers together. Another group, every year, they chant those, and you know, lines of their sons, they chant those prayers together, and then another group, and they practice them all year long, and it's a big festival of prayers to Lord Nrsingadev in various forms of prayer. And then that ends at 11 o'clock at night, and then some select persons go, and they gather 1,000 pots of water, and the water comes from a nearby river, and river that comes out of the mountain. I'll do that one again. A river that comes out of the mountain. It's not glacier ice that's melting or snow that's melting and comes down the mountain. It just comes out of the mountain, like Gangotri, just comes out of the mountain. They made a point to describe this, and they said, how does it work? He said, there was a time, maybe some of you are from Andhra, and you know that there was a time when there was a drought. There was no rain for several years. So way up on the Simashala mountain, one would expect they wouldn't have water. So persons were volunteering to bring water and said, we don't have any problem, we just get from the river that's coming out of the mountain. And it's pure. It's sacred and it's pure. It's so they have a ceremony where they go and get the water from that river and bring it back in pots. 1,000 pots. And the chief priest offers the first pot. Oh, they remove the sandalwood at 1:30 in the morning, and then they perform Abhishek, 1,000 pots of this special water. And then they do their puja. And then from 6 o'clock in the morning till again 6 o'clock at night, for 12 hours, there's darshan of the deity not covered in sandalwood, one day of the year. And the head of the deity is like Varaha, and the rest of the body is like a lion. So, Varaha Nrisimha. Very beautiful deity. I haven't seen the deity except in, because they don't allow photos, so I've seen drawings of the deity. And very, very beautiful deity. And not such a large deity, but, you know, with the chandan on, it's huge. And that's the main worshipable deity. Because the personality of Godhead, he protects his devotee. We're going to spend some time tomorrow on this principle, because that's why Hiranyakashipu, why Lord Nrisimhadeva appears, is to give protection to Prahlad. And one who is fully surrendered to the personality of Godhead, they're protected. I was discussing this with some devotees just in anticipation of Nrisimha Chaturdasi. The things that Prahlad was subjected to by his father that were unsuccessful, it's one thing, you know, the elephants didn't step on him, or the poisonous serpents didn't bite him, but he was fed poison. And he was put in a big fire. And those material elements, poison and fire, didn't affect him. So, how is that? Because he was born, he had a body, and bodies get burned. And bodies can be poisoned. Another pushed off the cliff, the Supreme Lord saved him. But the personality of Godhead, the energies of the Lord are under his full control. So like Prabhupada speaks about electricity, an expert electrician can take electricity and make something hot or make something cold. Same energy, electricity. So the personality of Godhead can make fire such that it's cooling. I was on a morning walk with Srila Prabhupada one time in Vrindavan, and apparently I had the sense that this was part of an ongoing discussion with devotees, where he was speaking that scientists just present some theory and then you're supposed to debunk it. Like they have some authority to present some theory. So Prabhupada in that mood said, I have a theory. He said, my theory is that the moon has cool flame. Because the moon is bright, and the Vedic wisdom teaches us that it's the moonlight creates vegetation. Even with sunlight, without moonlight, you don't have vegetation. You have to have moonlight. Therefore, there's light, not just reflected light, but it's cool. So it's cool flame. That's my theory. Prove me wrong. And he looked around like, go ahead, I dare you. Then he would, you know, say it again in different ways. So whether the moon has cool flame or not, whether Prabhupada intended it seriously or not, leave that to the side. The personality of Godhead has control of his energies. They move under his indication. So he can create a situation where one person is burned and another person is cooled. It's under his control. And as the protector of his devotee, that can happen. And Prahlad was protected. But this very nice pastime where the personality of Godhead manifested this amazing form, Varaha Nrisinga, and later accepted a deity form so that persons could, in an ongoing way, worship that wonderful form of the Lord. It's a nice meditation on Lord Nrisingadeva's appearance, the eve of Lord Nrisingadeva's appearance. Any discussion or comments, anyone?
Hare Krishna Maharaj, thank you for the wonderful class. I have a question, Maharaj. I heard somewhere that when Vishnu was trying to protect Narasimha, he came down the cliff.
Yeah.
He hit a thorn, struck his foot, and that's why they put the chandan. Is there anything like that?
I heard that one. What I just narrated is I visited in Simhachalam in January this year. And this year or year before? Anyway, visited Simhachalam year before, I think. And we heard from the priests. They took some time and described. So what I just shared is what they described. The Lord stepped on a thorn and wanted chandan.
I was in Melukote a few years ago.
Uh-huh.
And then a devotee, Bhaktivinoda Prabhu, in India, like he was describing how Prahlad Maharaj was jumping down, was falling down the cliff, and Vishnu on Garuda came down faster than he fell down, and then caught hold of him, and then came down further with that force, and then his foot stuck a thorn, and they put chandan around it. But I never heard any other story.
Okay. You have something?
Hare Krishna. You said that the moon has got cool energy, but it is not independent as but dependent on sun, and sun is depending on the Supreme.
Yes. That's our normal conception. Prabhupada, I take it that Prabhupada was having fun. The scientists can conjecture, then I'll make a conjecture. As the scientists say, here's my theory, prove me wrong. So you prove me wrong. Here's my conjecture. I took it that way. He wasn't meaning that's the fact. He was spoofing on the scientists.
The scientists, they depend upon the materials available.
Well, besides what they depend upon, their process is speculation. Speculation is agitate the mind, go out and out and out, see what you come up with, and then you come back and say, hey, this is what I came up with by my mental speculation. That's their method. And as Prabhupada would say, another speculator comes along, disproves that can't be, and then makes another speculation. And that's their program. And they get a PhD or get some published in some something.
I have another question.
Yeah.
Out of this scope.
Okay, fine.
Lord Krishna, when he was imparting this knowledge to Arjuna,
yeah,
he specifically tells not to go for demigods, because they are all parts and parcels of me. And at the same time, he tells Arjuna, the same knowledge I have given to Vivaswan some billions of years before. But Was that demigod's worship was going on that time?
Why not? Why not? Because the demigods were existing,
yeah,
and they were living entities who were wishing for prosperity, and so worship was there. Why not? You're thinking it wasn't going on? I should say it that way.
No, I'm not thinking, because you see, I have to accept Vedas. What I mean, when we look into Treta Yuga, when Rama was there,
yeah,
that time was not there.
What was not there?
Worshipping demigods.
I beg your pardon?
But I didn't come across when I was reading Bhagavad Gita and Bhagavatam. Because the same knowledge he has given to Vaswan, the sun god, that I was getting confused. There was nothing in Treta Yuga or Satya Yuga, because they were all pious and God-oriented.
They were theistic, but they were also... anyone who takes birth... there's two things. Was it going on? And if it was going on what basis was it going on? And yes, it was going on, and on what basis is, because when one gets a material body and identifies with it, and is pious to some degree, then they turn to the Vedas. The Vedas, which are eternal, have vast amounts of karmakanda rituals for worship of the Vedas for material benefit. I come into this material world because I want to enjoy, and there's means for enjoyment that come from the Vedas, that's found in the karmakanda portion of the Vedas, and I follow it because I want to prosper. It's there. It's not a question of yoga, it's embodiment. And the present age it's diminishing like anything, any kind of worship of any kind, and even where there is some kind of worship, it's distorted and, you know, not transparent and intact. But for sure, there during Dwarapa Yuga, there was demigod worship. Or during the time that Krishna spoke to the sun god Vivaswan. The Vedas are existent eternally. And Krishna taught, and there was demigod worship. I don't get how you can imagine that there wasn't. As much as I suppose you can't imagine how I'm saying that there was. The Vedas are eternal. And the demigods exist even before the fullness of creation. We're reading just this morning, about the demigods feeling insufficient to do their service of directing the affairs of the material creation. That hadn't happened yet, and so the Virat Rupa appeared, so that they could do all their services with the proper intelligence and strength and empowerment. The demigods were there before even the fullness of the universe came into being, regardless of yoga. So, and worship of them was existence. Krishna says right in Bhagavad Gita, in the very beginning of your creation, I sent forth generations of men and demigods, and with them this sacrifice. And bless them. Be thou happy by the sacrifice.
Excuse me?
Yeah, go ahead.
Before creation or after creation?
Even before and after. What we're discussing just this morning is Kardama Muni speaking to Vidura in third canto Bhagavatam. And he's describing the process of creation, and before even the fullness of the universe is manifest, in its fullness, the demigods are there. The devatas are there. The controllers of the material elements are there.
But their parts and parcels are supreme.
That's okay. Is that a problem?
No, there is no problem.
It's nice.
There is no any problem.
What's your issue then? I don't get it. Am I missing something? Help me. We're just carrying on. Okay. Would you like to raise a question also? Different one, right? Go right ahead.
Thank you, Maharaj. You had mentioned that Prahlad commented on his mother being forgetful.
Yes.
Hearing Srimad Bhagavatam because of bodily attachment.
Yes.
So is that why I can't remember anything?
Yeah, that's why, that's our forgetfulness. Is in the next moment, the body is changed, the next moment the body is changed, the next moment the body is changed, and we're identifying with the body, so we can't remember the previous moment because we're identifying with the body.
With the new body.
Yeah. And those who are above the bodily conception, their remembrance is enduring, much more so. Now, there are some persons in the bodily conception, they're gifted with remembrance of a past life or past lives, or they have a capacity, because different persons have different capacities. But speaking in a general way, our forgetfulness is because of bodily identification.
Thank you.
Here's the microphone.
When you mentioned that the team is all of us have cycled through all 8.4 million species of life, is that a result of the actions we took when we were here, or by nature or virtue of us making that decision to try to enjoy separate from Krishna that we decided to come here, that we're automatically going to cycle these 8.4 million species?
I don't see the distinction that you're making.
I guess what I'm trying to figure out is it subsequent actions while we're in this material world that lead us to degrade to various species?
Yes.
And eventually come up? Or
yes. Okay. Yes. We don't start at the bottom. We start at the top and then work down.
We didn't start at the top.
Yeah. Yes. Okay? Yes. Here it comes.
In Buddhism, they believe that there are countless Buddhas who all have omniscience and the capability to manifest countless emanation bodies.
Countless emanation bodies, huh?
Yes.
Wow. What's an emanation body?
Well, it's like an emanation body can be in the form of a human or an animal, and it's sort of like taking rebirth, but the Buddhas in the Buddhist philosophy are in countless places at the same time, so they aren't sort of attached to any one form
okay.
as themselves.
Okay.
So in your understanding, what anyone ever be equal to Krishna, or is what anyone ever attain omniscience like Krishna?
No. He's one of a kind. One can attain consciousness of Krishna, but not consciousness equal to Krishna's. One can be empowered by Krishna to do as Krishna does, but it's his power granted, which means he can withdraw it also. So we're not independently powerful or independently knowing, and we cannot be omniscient because we're tiny. Okay? That was way in the back. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare.
Hare Krishna.
I bet it's going to be a good one.
I have two questions.
Ah, see?
The first was the statement that we should teach about Krishna or the Bhagavad Gita, not for kids, but there are five.
Yeah.
So, since I myself do not have that faith or complete surrender to Krishna, how do I give that to my daughter? Because
you won't be able to. You can only give what you have. You can't give what you don't have. You do your best. You give what you have. And then you nurture that which you don't have. And what does Krishna say? when you engage in devotional service in that way, he carries what you lack and preserves what you have. Ananyas chintayan tamam, you know the verse? Yejana paryupasate tesham nityabhiyuktanam yogakshema vaham yaham. Look it up. It will help your, help you feel less stressed out about not being so qualified. Krishna will carry what you lack.
And the other was with the example of the Jack in the Box that you gave.
Yeah.
Whatever I have read or heard, my understanding is that material happiness is illusion in the sense it's temporary.
Yes.
But spiritual or the happiness from devotional service is more permanent.
That's permanent.
But
and it's qualitatively different as well. Not just time, but quality.
And but the way, or because of the conditioning, or the way right now it is, that I expect reward immediately after an endeavor, which is very easy in material life, but that's not the case when we do devotional service.
Right.
So how do I...
change your expectations. Change your expectations. Here's the formula. Utsahan nishchayad dhairyat. You've heard that one before? Rupa Goswami, Nectar of Instruction. Utsahan is be enthusiastic. And then the next one is be patient. It sounds like go, stop. But it's not. Enthusiasm for what? Bhaktivinoda Thakur teaches in his commentary on that verse, enthusiasm cannot be sustained unless one has a spiritual conception. Because the other kind of enthusiasm is passion. And passion wants one thing, the fruit. Attachment to the fruit. Get that result. Because when you get that result, you're going to enjoy. That's passion. And enthusiasm in goodness or the spiritual conception is very different. The spiritual conception is I'm eternal and Krishna is eternal and service to Krishna is eternal. Let me engage in that. And then the patient means the result is completely up to Krishna. When I engage in service to Krishna, the result is in his hand. Because I'm not the doer. I'm a servant. And Krishna is the master, and he can do whatever he likes. Fortunately, he's loving. He likes to do nice things. But it's in his hand. And so I'm very patient. And what can sustain the combination of being very enthusiastic and patient is I have deep conviction, or at least I'm working on it, developing dhairyat, confidence in the process of devotional service itself, process in the reality of the mercy of Krishna, process in the fact that even though I'm this very fragile, delicate, not so competent, not so strong, impurity-infested personality, Krishna is very kind. And the process of devotional service is very powerful and uplifting and purifying. That's my hope. And so I can remain enthusiastic, and I can be patient, and I can stay convinced. Dhairyat. It's like the word dhira. You know what that word means, right? Dhira. Remaining undisturbed, steadfast in all circumstances of duality. You're trying to talk and your daughter's demanding your attention and it's a little distracting, and maintain enthusiasm anyways. Okay? Alright. Practice. Abhyasa. That's the teaching, Bhagavad Gita. Yes.
Hare Krishna Maharaj, thank you for this. Maharaj, you mentioned about Prahlad's mother forgetfulness of the knowledge that she had.
Yes.
But we hear that the Lord as the Paramatma is constantly guiding the living entities, even, you know, when once they take up the devotional service, even if they fall down or if there's a situation of forgetfulness, the super soul guides the living entity. In this, I was not able to understand or get that.
I didn't say that in this class, but it's true. And you want to know, how does that work? That's your question? Well, the unique thing, Narada speaks to Yudhisthira about this. And it says, that living entity who has at even once tasted or experienced spiritual consciousness, Krishna consciousness, God consciousness, clear consciousness, even if they again become covered, that experience is incomparable. Can you lean that way? There we go. That experience is incomparable. I'll never forget it. Even you can try to forget it, you can't forget it. That's super soul. Now, guiding is at least from that platform, because super soul doesn't intervene, doesn't say, you know, I'm not going to let you do that. I'm going to guide you over here instead. But it's something like Ajamila naming his son Narayana. Prabhupada speaks about it, that super soul being pleased with his childhood youth activity of being pure, he, from within his heart, he inspired him to name his son Narayana. So super soul prompted like that. And other ways super soul can prompt. Now, we still have to say yes, we can still say no. But still the prompting is there. The real happiness is not in these other activities.
So was Kayata not a devotee, or was she a devotee in the sense?
She was simple.
So for the devotee is a different equation, but the Lord personally...
Yes. The intervening with what the demigods and Indra were doing was because of Prahlad. He recognized, this is a very special... No, it's not Hiranyakashipu Jr. This is a great personality. In the womb of Kayadu is a pure devotee of the Lord. Now, how he had that cognizance doesn't say, but he knew. It was Prahlad. And Kayadu was just simple. Without the association of Hiranyakashipu, she was happy to hear Srimad Bhagavatam. In the association of Hiranyakashipu, she was happy just to be Hiranyakashipu-like. It was very simple. When properly protected, she engaged nicely. She liked. And when improperly, she followed. It was very simple. She wasn't ill-spirited like Hiranyakashipu. She was just married to him.
Is compassionate to such devotees, entities, when they're following the dharma in the position they
are in. Sure. He was kind to Hiranyakashipu also. He relieved him of all of those sinful reactions. And Prahlad said, that was his first prayer, please forgive him. And the answer was, he's already been forgiven. He's fully cleansed just because he's related to you. So ask for something that didn't happen yet, because that's already done. Yeah. You all right? Anything else? Okay. Thank you very much. Srila Prabhupada ki jai.
Jai.